Good evening, Mayor and Council. Thank you for joining us for this special briefing tonight to discuss the classification and compensation study that was recently performed for us by Evergreen Solutions. I'm going to turn it over to Deputy City Manager Nelson for a brief introduction.
Thank you.
Forgot to add, while this is a public meeting, there will not be comment from the public or courtesy of the floor. So please, to those in the audience, no comments.
Thank you, Mike. We're going to start by just doing a really brief high-level overview of the city's position classification and pay plan. For some of you, this may be the first time that you're going through this process. So we just want to make sure that everyone is kind of aware of the city's plan, how it is organized, and the purpose of the plan. It is a formal policy document adopted by council. It establishes a compensation system for all non-union positions across all city departments. It includes a classification system, which is a systematic way to group positions based on their duties, responsibilities, and required knowledge, skills, and abilities. And then those positions are slotted into pay grades, and each pay grade has a range or steps depending on structure, and a minimum, midpoint, and maximum. And then finally, the plan also includes administrative rules. Those are the policies that guide us in administering the plan and maintaining the plan and making changes to the plan once necessary. Why is the pay plan important? Primarily because the pay plan helps us to align with the goals that have been identified in the city's strategic plan. Specifically, that the goal to develop policies and processes to attract and retain a qualified and highly motivated workforce. The way that the plan, some of the components of the plan, helps to get there, we want to ensure competitiveness. That is, it helps the city attract and retain qualified staff by setting the pay rate at a rate that is competitive in the marketplace. We also look at internal equity to assure that we are providing consistent treatment of employees by a standardized method for classifying work and setting pay. It also helps us with performance management because it is used to link employee performance to pay increases, and it provides guidance for advancement through the plan. And finally, for budget control, it provides a framework for managing compensation costs and our annual budgets. Who's covered by the plan? This plan is for, it covers 417 non-union employee positions across all city departments. 291 of those are full-time authorized positions, and 126 are part-time. Not covered by this plan are the police officers, police corporals, and police sergeants. Those are the only three positions that are not included in this plan. And that's because those are covered by the FOP collective bargaining agreement. Did want to point out that in the police department, our police chief, the three commanders, and all of the civilian positions within the police department are covered under this plan. So on the slide, you have a breakdown of full-time and part-time employees by department. You can see in Beaches Energy and Public Works, we don't have any part-time employees. They're all full-time employees. And then Parks and Rec has the majority of those employees are part-time. So you can look at the distribution to get an understanding of how our part-time and full-time employees are.
Karen, while you're on that side, can you just, just for my memory, is this the first time we've done a pay study since La Luna?
It is. Yeah, thanks for asking. This is the first time in 3 years that we have done a pay study. So 3 years ago, we were near the end of our LIHEA contract, and the union has since been decertified. So we are doing things a little differently this year because we don't have a union. Number one, there's no negotiation involved with the plan. We still went through the pay study process in the same way that we did in prior years, but that element of the union negotiations has been removed from the process. It also means that our presentation to council and our conversations with council have been a little different because there's a new, we're not able to have any meetings to have these discussions. And so we are now trying to bring as much information to you as we have in a public setting. And this is the first time that we've done things this way.
So of the, just, I won't hold you to this number, so 417 non-union employees, how many of those about would have been previously covered under La Una?
I think the number was about 179, yeah, plus the 200.
Okay.
So, yeah, a big difference in the way we are now structured, the way that we are administering the plan, but yeah.
Just want to make sure, especially the folks that are here.
Yes, the folks in the room, and just rough estimate, it looks like the majority of the employees in the room were probably LIUNA employees before. So this is also the first time for the employees to see it presented in this way.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions on that? Just to talk a little bit about the process for pay plan amendments, we do typically conduct a pay study every 3 years to ensure that the plan remains competitive and aligned with the strategic plan. This is one of those years. We contracted with Evergreen Solutions, and we have a representative from Evergreen who's going to speak to you guys in just a couple of minutes. And then off-cycle, when we're not doing a pay study, we may, administration will periodically bring amendments to City Council by resolution. And that's just to address changes in operational needs or changes in job descriptions, or sometimes our policies just need to be revised and rewritten and updated to address specific needs. These current pay plan amendments will be presented to City Council by resolution on October 20th at our next council meeting. That resolution will serve to implement the pay study results and recommendations that will be adjusting the pay grades to remain competitive within the market, and some positions will be recommended to be reclassified to better align with job duties and responsibilities. We will also be adding the new positions that were approved in the 2026 budget. So you all approved in the budget, adopted a handful of brand new job positions and new titles. Even though you've already approved them, we can't advertise those positions because the titles don't yet exist in our pay plan, and they have to be slotted into the appropriate pay grade. So that's another component of the pay plan amendments by resolution, is that you will be able to add those job titles, and we can go ahead and advertise those jobs. We also have some policies I mentioned earlier that will need to be updated or revised just to reflect best practices. And then finally, just to tweak some language for clarification. So you'll be seeing all of that on October 20th with the resolution. Does anybody have any questions on any of the general information?
In the deck, does it share who the peer plans were that we compared against?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, I'm going to turn it over to Stacey Witchell, our representative from Evergreen.
Hi, I'm Stacey Witchell, and I'm project manager with Evergreen Solutions. Thank you for having me here today. We've been working with your project team here on the study for the last few months, working on all phases of the study together through a very collaborative effort. So happy to be able to share that with everybody today, and we'll walk through recommendations and our findings here. What we're going to go through right now, we're going to walk through study goals. We're going to look at internal review and the process that we undertake there. Externally, we'll look at what we found in that external market. We'll bring that information in together to form our recommendations. And then we'll talk some next steps, and then we'll leave it open for questions at the end. Having said that, if you have a question, that don't you can stop me along the way. I want this to be very conversational. So if you have questions, we can look at them on the slides we're on. You don't have to stop it. And we'll have to get to the end.
Yes, ma'am. Are you from Jacksonville, or where are you from?
I'm from Tallahassee, Florida.
Oh, okay. I didn't know.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So for your study goals, internally, we're looking at what you wanted to do internally is look at your current system you have in place right now. You want to look at your current classification system, your compensation system, and ensure internal equity. You want to make sure you get proper alignment with your classifications and your pay grade system. For external, you want to know where you are in relation to your peers. So our goal there is to understand where you currently fall within that market, and that'll help also inform where you want to be in that market and with the recommendations. And we bring all that data in together for our recommendations to make recommendations on both your classification plan and your compensation plan. We do that through a regression analysis, where we bring both market data and internal data in together to help inform placements and adjustments. As part of your internal review, we do what we call an assessment of current conditions. That assessment of current conditions is where we look at the plans you have in place right now, and we're looking at strengths and weaknesses of those plans. We notice that you've got three open range plans right now. Of the ones that were included in the study, you've got three open range plans and three step plans. Open range means I've got to define the minimum, midpoint, and max. And then the step plans, I've got a minimum and a max, but I've got defined steps within that plan as well. You have 38 pay grades across all the different plans. We had about 200 classifications that represented, at that point in time, about 340 employees. Remember, that was a snapshot in time, and so that's the number of employees you had when we did that original data collection. That number fluctuates because employees don't stay put. They're not a static number. Your average range spread for all of your pay grades did vary. Your range spread is the distance from minimum to maximum at each one of your pay grades. And for some of your step plans, it was around 17%. And then looking at your general plan, the open range plan, it would have been 57.9%. So for those ranges and what we see in industry and best practices, your range spread right now does fall within best practice, especially for a certain size. A little bit more digging into your assessment of current conditions, we looked at salary distribution. The average tenure for your included employees is 7.9 years. So that's looking at just a pure average. If I look at the median distribution, it's kind of where the clusters of those numbers are, it's almost 5.2 years. So it tells me you've got some more recent hires, maybe some cohorts have retired, you've replaced some positions. Those things have happened along the way the last few years that have brought that tenure down a little bit. A little more 56% of your employees are compensated below the midpoint of their pay ranges currently. Again, that aligns with what we're seeing in your tenure. When you see people at midpoint, typically that's where they've got that proficiency in their career. Traditionally, that's been about 15 years. Your tenure does tend to increase throughout the pay range of the quartiles. So as people advance through those quartiles, their tenure is also increasing. So we saw that as it went through. Again, that's what you would expect to see in a plan that's well managed.
Is your determination based on the 7 years for a full career? Do you have that number? Is it like a 40-year career?
We looked at a 30-year. We did the 30-year career.
A 30-year?
Mm-hmm. A little bit more into your actuals versus projected salaries. We did find that about more than 10%, this is across all the pay plans, more than 10% of your employees are actually compensated, more than 50% of your employees are compensated at greater than 10% of where we would expect them to be. That's for a couple of different reasons. One, your step plans are a bit more narrow, so they advance a little bit faster through those step plans. The other is hiring experienced people, because we don't have a way to account for external experience when they come into your system. And then the other is market-driven. Sometimes the market just has you in a place where you're not hiring minimums, you've got to hire above a minimum. You've got, again, the rest of the slides there, you'll see about 44-45% of your people are paid within what the models would predict. We also conducted what we call our outreach sessions.
Before we move on, so on the 44.5%, can you give us some insight into those that are falling below where they should be versus the 0 to 10s?
For the breakdown of that negative 10 to plus 10?
Yeah.
So some of that is going to be based on what we have as their current tenure. So if they have a possibility of your career, they've got no experience walking in the door, where were they placed within your schedule? If they have 3 years, where were they placed within the schedule? And how did you account for that in the schedule? Okay. I don't have that external data to know that part of it. But which level positions are you talking? There was a little bit throughout. It wasn't in one particular area.
Yeah, I was just more meaning like the absolute percentage of the 44% is half of it below zero, and half of it above zero, or 80% below zero.
Yeah.
Because those are significant, could be significantly different implications from that. in the way people would feel?
There can. I don't have that number with me right now, but I can leave it when I get ready. I'll email it over, if that's okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, we'll give you that breakdown. In the full breakdown, we did look at it as negative, plus or minus 5. So that would give you a lot closer number to what you're looking for. So for the outreach sessions, one of our consultants came over and met with all the different directors and department heads to really ask some more questions about what is working well and maybe where are some opportunities to do some things a little differently within each of their departments. So some of the things that are working well, they really felt like there was a very responsive administration. You had leadership that listened to the employees. Felt like retention overall was increasing, that you're able to recruit and retain some quality folks, and that percentage of retention is getting much better. Peer relationships, people genuinely like who they're working with. They really like working here, and they like the city as their place to build their career. Areas of concern, a little concern about benefits. Benefits, they felt like we should really be looking at that local market and how you compare within that local market. Pay plans, want to make sure that they're evaluated for internal equity. And that really relates to that last bullet there, too, where there was some question about, you know, how are positions placed within the pay plan? Are they aligned appropriately based on the role and the work that the position does? We did also use what we call our job assessment tool, and we evaluated each of your different classifications. We looked at them all in relation to each other. So how what they do, where do they line up in your system, and what can we tell by looking at that level of evaluation? So that is something we did. We actually did look at each of your classifications, and then they all get ranked and evaluated, and that helps to inform the hierarchy and the class needs that you have moving forward. From an external standpoint for your market, again, we did want to see where you stand in the market currently, and that also helped inform where you want to be in the market. And then we also looked at cost of living. We did apply a cost of living factor to the data because we want to make sure everything's at the value of the dollar here within the city. So if you have a peer that's right outside of your immediate area, that cost of living is going to be different than it is here. Whether it's lower or higher, we want to bring it all to the value of the dollar here locally. Here's a list of your market peers. I think somebody asked me about that one a second ago. Here's a list of the peers that were selected through a collaborative effort to see how are you comparing in the market. So there's peers here that you are directly competing with for quality staff. We looked at common services, budget, size, all those types of factors. You're also going to notice on here quite a few utility authorities. Because while they are not organized exactly like the city municipal government is, you are competing with some of these folks for quality staff and your utilities. So overall, when we looked at all of the data and compiled, we used 20 peers there. We got data from all but one. There was only one of those peers that elected not to participate in the survey. We used 100 of your classifications across all different departments and levels as our benchmarks. And we had about 20 of them that had limited matches. And I say limited because what we're looking for is not title matches, we're looking for functional matches. And it's not a hard and fast number. You, even with your own city, you have drift between positions. Between peers, you have a more drift. So I'm looking for at least a 70% match up to functions, roles, responsibilities, minimum qualifications. I want to know that they're fundamentally doing the same thing. And if they're not, we don't use those as data points. The total matches, we had over 625 quality data points that we did use for the study, and it gives me an average match count of 7.4 quality matches per benchmark. Now, what does that tell us with how you compare in the market? So if we're looking at your market, if we look at that first comparison, that's your average. So this is not corrected for cost of living. This is looking at just a pure average. If you look at that, at the minimum, midpoint, and maximum of your salaries, you're behind the market. Not much, but you are a little bit behind the market there at all three points. If I look at the 50th percentile, so thinking about that bell curve, that distribution of the 50th percentile, again, you're behind market at that point. Again, we're not egregiously behind market, but you have slipped in your level of competitiveness where you were 3 or 4 years ago. At the 60th percentile, you look at that one again, a little bit further behind market at each of the 3 points. And when we were looking at at where you want to be from a competitive standpoint, we did earmark and target that 60th percentile as a place where you really want to be competitive at, ideally for at least this budget year. Now, looking at a little bit further breakdown, so that one gave you kind of the overall. Whenever you look at an overall market, there's always going to be classifications that are going to be above market, at market, and below the market. So here, this gives us something where we're looking at those by departments or job families. And you're going to notice that most of your areas are below the market currently, even at that 60th percentile. Let's talk about the two bookends here that we've got. So the first is electric. Electric looks like at those minimums, they're about 13% behind market, right? Keep in mind that that does include those large-scale utility authorities. If we look at just the municipals, then that gap closes. It's not quite as far below, okay? If you look at the IT or IS positions for you, where you were several years ago versus now, you're competitive within the market right now, but not as competitive as you used to be. You've definitely lost ground in that area. And those are looking at those public sector or other cities only. If we look at the private sector, then that number is going to fall. I would project that it would probably be below market, actually. Looking at benefits, we did take a look at benefits for you. And this is what we really found for the strengths for the city and then some considerations for you moving forward. You do have a strong benefit package overall. If we look at it compared to the cities, you do have a nice competitive benefits package. If we look at those areas where there's maybe some considerations moving forward, we did find that you had a higher dependent cost for health and dental coverage. Short-term disability is something we were seeing at some of your peers, not all of them. Some of your peers have moved to a PTO, personal time off approach, instead of a sick leave and an annual leave. There's pros and cons to either way you want to do it. I've got almost 30 years of public sector experience myself. It's easier to manage sick and annual, but there's pros to doing PTO. So that's just something for you guys to think about.
Please forgive me. I should have asked this on the last slide, but I've been thinking about it. How much money would it cost the city on an annual basis to bring all these negatives up to zero?
If we can hold on that one, we can
talk about
rotation strategy.
Okay.
I got you.
Okay.
I do have a question.
Yes, what you have.
If you wouldn't mind just sharing with us the juxtaposition of two different statements. One, we have very strong benefits, and then the other was a concern from the internal survey, where one of the areas of concern was our benefits.
Locally.
And so if you guys, or maybe other members of leadership can help out with that, to understand the kind of why we don't have a positive perception of something that should be positive.
So I can speak to it a little bit, but I'll have to let your other experts here touch on some of that. But when you're looking at the benefits and the perception from employees during the outreach, a lot of times what you're looking at, and I say this being a former state employee myself, when you're looking at some of the different county plans and some of those other bigger organizational plans, it's hard to compete at that level. And I'm going to assume that's where some of that concern came from. But when we compare your benefits to some of those other municipalities, then you do have a very strong package compared to some of them.
That's what drove my question, because it says compared to the local market. And just as somebody who has worked in the local market in many employers.
Yeah.
We have very rich benefits compared to a lot of local market, to mm-hmm. a lot of our major employers. So I just was kind of curious, is there an opportunity as part of this process to help educate folks so that they understand? Because I struggle with us making a strong financial commitment so that people have good benefits and then for them to feel they don't.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that would be on us as an opportunity to come out of this process to make sure that we're doing that.
Yeah, absolutely, I agree. I think what we're talking about here is maybe a gap between perception and then what the data is telling us. And absolutely, that tells us that there is a better opportunity for us to communicate with our employees and maybe allow for more input and participation when designing those benefit packages.
Be great. Thanks.
Thank you.
Kim, I've got a quick question on the SPD stuff. Clearly, you're an employer paid, but Has there not been any voluntary STD offered in the past?
Yes. Yes. In the past, we have offered.
We've offered it, but didn't get enough participation to be able to actually put it to motion.
And I think what I'm seeing, too, in the data is that a lot of our comparable agencies also do not offer that short-term disability. Is that
not an employer
consistent?
Paid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's the voluntary. We're seeing it with voluntary, but often not employer paid.
And we do have that unlimited sick leave policy that kind of takes the place of short-term disability. We allow them to accumulate. Sorry. We allow employees to accumulate.
Term.
Sorry. But we do allow employees to accumulate unlimited sick leave to kind of take place of a short-term disability.
And then after we bring that up, it seemed like an obvious disconnect there. Would you think that I would probably agree with some of the additional communication would help on that?
Yeah, for sure.
So bringing all the internal and external data in for some recommendations, we are looking to do an implementation and update equity plans based at that 60th percentile. So you're competitive at that little bit more aggressive part of the bell curve. We're going to assign all classifications to pay grades based on internal and external equity, and then implement revised plans using a defined implementation strategy. Skip ahead to my notes really fast. All right, so looking at the recommendations for your general plan, so this is a 300 grade series. So 308 is the first pay grade that you currently use. You have a good structure in place right now, so we're not looking to change that structure, but we do want to update it to fit your needs. So 308 is the first pay grade that you start with currently. It's at 1591 now, so we'd be increasing that to 1671.
So, and I apologize for this. The grades, of course, are absolutely lost on any of us. Could you, as you're talking through this, maybe correlate it back to the graph that showed where the different areas were either significantly above or below the line from a backward
type? Yeah, I can do that in general.
At least allow us some level of relativity to understand what we're...
So your 300 series here, that general, that entry-level position, the 308, and it's going to go all the way to 335, 6. So that encompasses most of your positions, from that very entry-level position all the way down through executive leadership. And so your positions, and while you were talking about the graph before, the classifications that were included in the market, they kind of spanned all grades.
Right.
So I can't really pinpoint a particular grade or place or adjustment, but I can tell you when you looked at that 60th percentile at the maximums, you were about 5% behind market. So yeah. our goal here was to address that and increase your pay plan by at least a 5%.
Yeah, and I guess my concern would be, or question would be the obvious, which is if we have one department that's, what was it, 13% below?
With the authorities included.
Yeah, 13% below and another that's 8% above and everybody's getting 5 is...
So it's a multi-step process.
Yeah.
So what we're doing, we want to look at the pay plans a little bit separately from our classification. So we want to design the pay plans so you're competitive at the 60th percentile of the market, and then go through and evaluate your classifications. Remember, market's only one factor that we're looking at. We're also looking at your hierarchy, your structure, and how you look at the levels you have of your different positions, and then how to best align them within that structure. So it's both internal equity and external equity, and then we build the regression formula around both of those factors. So market alone is not my only driver. It's one of them. It's a very important one, but it's not my only driver for grade placement. But you're right, a 5% adjustment doesn't help something that's 10% behind in the market. So there are select classifications that you evaluate through here and consider a grade increase as well. So that way it gets both.
And we'll cover those.
We're not prepared to go line by line through the pay plan and cover each position in this discussion. But we wanted to kind of get some feedback from you all and get a better understanding of the overall recommended adjustment to the pay plan. And then there will be about 45 positions that have been identified within the study that will be recommended for a reclassification.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
the rest of your general plan. Here's for grades 321 through 336. Your energy services step plan, this is the 201 and 201. Those two are the step plans. 202 is a flat rate position that it is currently, but we did want to increase it to better align with the market. Your energy services, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. Again, these are looking at increases. That 203, that base right now is 3829. And we're going to increase that to 4059. For your ocean rescue part-time, this is a step plan. This is 601 and 2. This is those part-time positions within that area. Full-time positions under ocean rescue. We did create a 700 series off the 600 just to differentiate part-time and full-time in the system, make it a little easier to run reports. So those numbers also are increasing by about that same 5%. And then this is your crossing guard. And this, again, we've increased that off of its current start, same percentage. So whenever you talk about a new plan implementation strategies, there's always several different approaches to doing so. The first thing that we all do when we're looking at this is evaluate first bring to minimum. Bring to minimum crosswalks all your people into your new pay plans, assigns them to new pay grades, and it really resets your foundation. Right, but that's not the only thing you want to do. You want to be able to now realign them where they need to be within that pay range. And so if you use a tool like a class parity lets us take a look and build estimates based on time with the city. How long you've been in your current classification, where would we expect your salary to be based on that, and let's make sure we're aligning you accordingly. And then maintaining step placement for those employees that are on a step plan. We want to maintain their step placement. We don't want to lose credit for the years that they have with you right now. So those are some of the different approaches that we utilize. Again, the bring to minimum is just the foundation of what we do, and then we build on it from there. Additional recommendations moving forward, you want to continue to conduct annual small-scale market surveys, do a regular check-in to make sure the market's not moving away from you too much. And then if you're doing that on a regular basis, you really only need a comprehensive every 3 to 5 years. And then review your compensation guidelines annually, and revise them as needed. I will say I did give commendation to your leadership team here. Your policies, your guidelines you have in place right now are really honestly some of the best that we have seen. And I had no other additional recommendations, but I did have three commendations in the report for that. Looking ahead. So something we always got to do is look ahead to see where you need to be planning for moving forward. If you look at what Office of Economic is doing right now, Office of Economic Development Research is looking at right now, the data that they actually get from University of Florida, is what does the projections look like? And if you look moving ahead to the next upcoming fiscal years, this is all industries, not just public sector, you're looking at about a 4% increase projected over the next couple of fiscal years based on where they project cost of living adjustments are going to fall. Again, that's across all industries. What we're seeing trending right now is about a 3.5% in the public sector. So we're seeing people plan for about a 3 to 3.5% cost of living adjustment increase in most areas within the Southeast, I would say.
Okay, so on the COLA, is that based off the Social Security market? How do they adjust, or how are you making that?
So this is from the state office of, I use their old name, Economic and Demographic Research, but it's the adjustments they get from University of Florida, how they do the evaluations. And they do look at economic indicators, same things that they look at for Social Security. They look at cost factors, even ECIs and some other ones as well, when they're going through to look at it.
And maybe a question for you, Karen. Do you know what the union dues were? Or maybe I'm not sure somebody out there can tell us, but what their union dues were, how much they paid?
I'm sorry, I don't know off the top of my head.
What were your union dues?
And that's it for any other questions, anything you can go back to.
So we'll get the, we'll understand the other changes, the 40, is it
41, I'm sorry.
The 45 employees, 45 positions that would be reclassified. Yes, like Stacey said, the recommendation is to move all of the pay grades by the 5%. And then within those pay grades, certain positions will be reclassified. Typically, we bring that to you with the resolution. I can send it out a few days in advance to give you some time to review it, and then you can ask questions if you have any questions for me or Kim based on that.
Yeah, that'd be great.
We'll try to get it out to you earlier.
Well, good evening. So Stacey just talked to you about the pay study methodology, so I kind of just wanted to piggyback on that and discuss with you what our team was looking at when we worked with Stacey to determine the right implementation method. So we looked at these four components. So I just want to quickly touch base on two of them, the strategic priorities and the trends and COLA. I know for the strategic priorities, I know Karen's already mentioned this, but this, obviously they're repeating, we're grounding this space study in our strategic priority number 4, goal 3, objective 2, where there was agreement that the city must develop policies and processes that attract and retain a qualified and highly motivated workforce. So just to put that out there for you. And then the next one I really wanted to touch on was the trends in the COLA. Like Stacey shared with you, I'm sure many, if not all of you, are aware that inflation, housing, insurance costs, they're going crazy and they're driving the wages higher across all of Florida. And people are having to increase their wages just to stay on the same pace. This is not to get ahead at all. And that's just kind of the market that we're competing in right now. So you can imagine how important it was for us to make sure that the implementation method that we took into consideration. I'm sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm missing a slide. Okay. So anyways, we wanted to make sure that when we were determining our implementation method, we took into consideration the strategic priorities, our core values, internal equity, and the trends that are going on right now, in addition to the COLA trends that are happening in the next 3 years. So with all this in mind, we strongly believe that the best implementation method is to maintain staff placement, as Stacey mentioned, that we believe that our employees' pay should move as the ranges move. So let me share with you why we believe that this is the best decision for the city. To begin with, it preserves the employee position within the pay grade. This keeps employees in the right spot in the structure so performance and promotions can still mean something. It prevents pay compression. This avoids that unfair situation where a new hire makes the same as someone who already has some years of experience. It keeps us competitive. If we don't keep pace with our neighbors, then we risk losing our talent to them. It supports retention and morale. When we adjust pay fairly, employees feel valued and are more likely to stay motivated and committed to the city. It delivers on the intent of the study. The whole point of the study wasn't just to update our pay ranges, it was to make sure our employees benefit from these necessary adjustments. And finally, it's a common best practice. This isn't just our idea. National experts recognize moving employees with the range is a fair and consistent practice. So these top four experts stress that ranges only work if the employees move with them. The Florida League of Cities and the GFOA, they both show that comp studies are standard practice in Florida and that uncompetitive pay is the leading cause of turnover in the local government. So hopefully you will realize that I didn't just pick these as random sources. These are actually nationally recognized leaders. Their guidance actually sets the standard for both public and private sector pay practices. And lastly, as we work towards finalizing the implementation method and process, we have to consider things like the budget impact, how quickly we apply adjustments, how we communicate with our employees, and how we maintain alignment over time. So as Stacey has already pointed out, the cost of living is projected to increase over the next 3 years by 3.5, 4.5, somewhere in that range. And if we want to stay competitive, we need to look at not only our approach this year, but our approach for next year too. So in addition to our recommendation of moving employees with the pay range, we would also like to come to council on the 20th with a strategy for cost of living adjustments for next fiscal year. And with that, we're also here for any questions.
So I think part of the success plan is going to have to be transparency and communication so that the employee knows what to expect. And there's a resource available for them to, you know, log in or go into your website and say, okay, this is what we should expect in the cost of living. I know that's a number that will probably adjust and float, but I know my previous employment, that was always a huge thing. I mean, there was a location that we could go online and say, okay, this is what we should be expecting to see in our pay over the course of the next 3 years. And that can adjust, you know, as an inflation adjust or what have you. But it falls into that hexagon of communication. So I think that's going to be important for them to know what the expectations are, what they're going to be seeing. And I think that also helps with retaining and recruiting as well.
I guess I'd like to ask Mike a question. Mike, will we ever get to speak with the employees other than outside of here? Or are we going to be here to hear from them in this matter regarding
In which regard do you mean?
We wanted to ask them questions like, what's important to you? What do you, you know, how do you feel about all this?
Typically, that would be done by us through annual employee surveys. We do onboarding surveys when employees get here during their probationary period. We do exit interviews when employees leave. But ultimately, I think you can see from the attendance here in the room, with this being the first time of doing this process without having a union contract in place for a majority of our general employees, this is something that's very important to them.
I recognize that. Yeah. I was just wondering if they would have an opportunity to speak or someone would. I don't know.
Just taking my public comment at the next meeting.
Yeah. Can we do say, if you're talking about publicly, if we'd like to share with you, they would certainly be able to do that at a council meeting.
Yeah. Oh, good. Okay.
Yes.
Good. I just want them to hear that, I guess.
Sure.
I just want to comment, and I know I look back a lot because I've been on the dais for a long time. And I can remember when, you know, we did a pay study and we just weren't even close. We weren't even on the same page as a lot of our like cities because of 2008, and we had a really huge downturn and it took us a long time to catch up. And it showed in empty offices and the way around. And so I'm really glad that we're at least in ballpark, and I think it's important for us to do these pay studies on a semi-regular basis, and I appreciate that we have some data to inform our decisions going forward. I do just want to say, too, that in these considerations that we also consider the factors of the increase of our annual contribution into our pension fund, because I know that was a huge increase last year with our lease fund, and then also the health insurance. That I know we're going to see that go up. Experts would say, I assume that that's going to be going up this year. So I think we're going to have a couple additional impacts that we might not be considering in this step necessarily, but that we need to keep an eye on as we're making our decisions.
Good evening, Council. My name is Dustin Scott. I'm a pension plan administrator. Here this evening to discuss with you some proposed ordinance changes pertaining to the pension plans. So we'll be changing gears here a bit. But first, we'll start with a little bit about how the pension plans work. Both our general and police officers' pension plans follow a defined benefit formula. For general employees, the formula is 2.5% per year of service multiplied by the final average compensation up to a maximum of 75% of pay or $100,000 annually, whichever is less. For police, the formula is the same, except for they earn 3% per year of service instead of 2.5%. In both cases, the final average compensation means the average of the highest 5 years of pensionable salary out of the most recent 10 years. This means that an employee's retirement benefit grows predictably with the years of service and pay, but cannot exceed either the percentage cap or the dollar cap.
Just for my clarification, you have the police capped at 95 or 100,000, whichever is less than a percentage now, right?
No, the ordinance that we brought to council two meetings ago was the first reading to raise this cap from 100,000 to 110. Currently, it's at 100,000.
Okay,
so this is current information.
I got you.
90% or 100,000 for the police, and 75% or 100,000 for general employees plan. And the ordinance would move both of those monetary caps to 110 for the first year, and 111 for 2026, and 112 for 2027.
Right, that's what I wanted to clarify under, so that they knew that that cap is.
We're good now. There's a slide for it.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
You guys like that.
Here we have a couple of examples of an employee's pension calculation. In the first example, a relatively high earner works 30 years, and the benefit reaches the maximum 75% of the average compensation. But the annual pension is still below the $100,000 cap. This shows that even a higher paid, long tenured employee may not reach the dollar limit cap in the general plan. In this same scenario, but for the police employee, you can see that the employee reaches the cap of 90% and ends with an annual pension of $108,000 as calculated, but under the current ordinance, this police employee would be limited to $100,000 annual pension. In the second example, a more typical earner works for 20 years for the city and ends up well below that level. This represents a common scenario for the majority of our workforce. So who does the cap impact? It's most likely to be an employee who has dedicated their career to the city of Jacksonville Beach, but being here near 30 years and being promoted to key positions. It's not just directors and commanders, so this could be high-skill positions like information systems or engineers. These are the very people that that this could impact, are the people that it's important for us to retain because those are the hardest positions to fill. Here are the proposed ordinance changes in Ordinance 2025-8228 and 2025-8229. The proposed ordinances make three key updates to the pension plans. One, to increase the annual benefit dollar cap from $100,000 to $110,000 in 2025, and then $111,000 in 2026, and $112,000 in 2027. Number two, to increase the backdrop interest rate from 3% to 3.5% for both plans. This is something that was negotiated in the FOP contract as well. And then for the general plan only, we're looking to provide a service purchase option for the general plan. This will allow employees with prior public service or military service to purchase up to 3 years at the employee's expense. The only reason this isn't being offered to the police is because a similar service purchase option already exists.
Is it similar or the same?
It's very similar, except for it has special references to they must have been an officer versus public service. This next slide is to provide the council some context of where our plan stands compared with other plans. The plans I've selected here are close to us, either close to us in proximity or structure of their city is similar. As you can see here, the general plan, our multiplier is fairly in line with the comparable plans. I think the item that sticks out here is that our plan has the lowest annual benefit cap percentage and the lowest annual benefit cap dollar amount. This isn't saying we have a bad plan at all. We don't. But our annual benefit dollar cap could cause some issues in the future. Here you can see the same information, but for the police plan. Again, you can see that the multiplier is in line with the other plans, but the annual benefit cap percentage and the dollar amounts are lower.
Just to make sure I understand, because I'm obviously getting something a little wrong, not a big deal though. So on page 46 where it says we're going to take the interest from 3 to 3.5, oh, for general and police?
Yes.
Is that the same thing as the multiplier?
It's not the same thing.
Okay.
So the multiplier is how much of a percentage they earn per year of service. So employee works for 10 years, they would get 25%. Works for 20 years, 50% for general and plan. And so for police, it's 3% per year. So it's those years, and that's the multiplier. The backdrop interest rate is, it's kind of hard to explain the backdrop, but it's a whole separate plan. But
yeah, if you're familiar with the drop plan.
I am not.
Okay.
I've worked private sector my entire
life. So we have a backdrop plan in both of our plans. We used to have a drop plan, and then we converted that in 2014 to a backdrop. But it allows for employees to, once they reach retirement eligibility and select a retirement date, to continue working for the city for a period of up to 3 years. And then when they exit, they can backdrop or drop back to that retirement date. Their retirement is calculated as of that date that they selected, but there's an accrued benefit for the up to a three-year period that they continue to work. This is the interest that's paid on that accrued benefit when they exit. Right now it's at 3%, and we are recommending raising it to 3.5%. That's consistent with the interest rate that we pay on accumulated contributions. So when employees exit without retiring and they get their contributions back, they're getting 3.5% interest on that.
Okay. For the general employees, how many years do they have to be in for the best?
10 years. Same as police. So what should we make the proposed cap increase? For one, the retention of key employees. Once an employee reaches the current dollar cap, there's less financial incentive to continue working for the city. You know, when employees want to retire, they come talk to me. I get their paperwork together, run projections for them, and all that. And I get to have some interesting conversations with those employees. And one thing I've learned is that already we've run into this situation once where we had a commander that retired that otherwise might have stayed because they were capped out in the pension on the dollar amount. Another reason is recruitment. When we want to be able to hire high caliber candidates, and this is something that they would definitely consider. And then finally, the sooner we make this change, the less money it would cost the city in the long run.
Was the 10-year for the backdrop determined back when the union was in place, the 3-year versus maybe a 5-year or?
Was the 10-year vesting? I'm sorry.
No, the length of the backdrop, that's 3 years.
It's been three for as long as we can remember, so.
Okay.
So I can't tell you where it originated, but yeah.
So kind of going back to the service purchase option to the general employees, there's several reasons to do this. Anytime we can provide a benefit to veterans or people that have public service, it comes at no cost to the city. That seems like a worthy thing to do. You don't get too many opportunities to do something like that. So It would also help with retention of these employees if we allow these employees to use their personal money to purchase up to 3 years of service, then those employees are much more likely to stay long-term in the city. I'd be happy to answer any questions, any further questions, Councilman.
So I'm curious, just as part of the evaluation process, have you guys, have we explored the value of 401k versus the pension plan and ensuring that our workforce is getting the best opportunity that they have that's available?
Can you speak a bit? So in our strategic operational plan, we do have a project to explore employee benefits, comprehensive employee benefits to include alternative pension solutions. I think we've got that 2 years out in the strategic plan just based on the other projects we have going right now. But I think you'll get your updates in the next
couple of days.
And the date will be in there.
I believe it's 2027 is when HR is going to undertake that project.
With finance.
Because there's lots of math involved.
I do want to point out that we currently do offer voluntary 457B and 403K, is that what it's called?
401A.
401A for an employee, in addition to the defined benefit.
Dustin, for the service purchase, does there need to be alignment with the position, or can any, what does the service have to look like for them to be able to?
So it's just any prior service with municipality, state, federal, or military service, as long as they are not receiving a pension plan for that service. So if it's a, the idea is to, steal a JEA employee that's got a few years of training, and they can come over here and roll over their money and buy a few years of credited service here. But it's if they're currently receiving a pension for that service, and it does not qualify.
But that would be relevant to the position. What if it's we're stealing a JEA employee to work in an administrative position? It's not necessarily relevant service. So are we going to make that judgment, or just?
It's not currently structured that way to make that judgment.
Okay.
It's just based on qualified service at the prior place, not what position they're coming to.
Steal employees too many times.
No, you didn't.
Does anybody have any other questions? No? So next steps, like I said, we are going to be working on the resolution to move forward on October 20th. We will get that information out to you as much in advance as we can so that you have time to review. It will be in the form of a red line pay plan, so if you guys have seen it, you've seen it numerous times, but it will have position by position, so it will be clear which ones are being recommended to be reclassified and to what pay grade. So once you all have had some time to look over that and give us a call with any specific questions, we'll be queuing that up to bring to you on the 20th resolution.
So I've already thought of my first question.
Yeah? So, okay.
And I'm going to piggyback off the mayor's comments earlier just around the other kind of quasi-benefit type of things that we've passed recently that have a budget impact.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, in the way that the information was shared with us today, that there's not really transparency in it for us to understand, tied to this presentation, the overall budget impact. I know it wasn't the budget,
right?
Sort of. One of the things I'd really be interested in is understanding kind of the full impact of all of the benefit changes and components that we're doing. It doesn't have to be laser to the, to the penny accurate, but like in kind of directionally, this is what all of these changes mean for us as a city. Just just because we're making, because we're being asked to make decisions on these and not understanding the full financial impact of them would not be necessarily appropriate to be making decisions on.
Of course. And we're, you know, this wasn't intended to provide all the information for you to make a decision. We wanted to take your feedback and prepare that information for you.
And I didn't even imply that. I just meant without that, though, it's hard to.
So I guess maybe I can ask a follow-up question to the benefit changes.
Only if it's not a hard question.
So I think what I hear you saying is you went into the financial impact of the benefit changes that we're contemplating as part of the pay plan?
So the pay plan, the pension, and I think we probably by now have a pretty good handle on benefits would be my guess. Open enrollment's right around the corner. So, like, some order of magnitude of that, just because when we make decisions and approve budget items, you know, we kind of understand the impact of what they are.
So the pension changes that are being proposed as part of the ordinance, there was an attachment with the impact statement from the actuary?
And I know we've seen the budget numbers, too, in the budget. I just meant, could we see them, like, kind of pulled together so we understood the aggregated impact?
The aggregated impact.
I think maybe I can speak to that. Like Ashley said, the ordinance that we're going to be bringing to a second reading has an impact statement. So there is a dollar amount defined for that for each fiscal year.
But that would be just as
much. Those numbers are then incorporated into the overall budget impact that we're going to present to you with the resolution for the pay plan. It will include all benefits. And so it will be fully loaded, in other words, these pay grade changes, reclassification, structural changes, plus the benefit changes will be calculated. So you'll have a full picture of the total impact.
And that'll be released in our normal process, so it'll be the Thursday before or whatever. So
yes, like I said, I'll get it out to you earlier. You know, we're working on it, and as soon as we feel like we have it in a good place for you, we'll go ahead and get that sent out to you so you don't have time to review it.
To piggyback off of Councilman Wilder's concerns, when is the proposal, when is that a public document, the proposal?
The pay plan amendments,
yeah.
Typically when we publish the agenda. So that would normally be the Thursday before. As soon as I, you know, send it to you.
Then you'll see this one.
Yes.
Okay.
So to circle back on the monetary impact, the pay plan that was presented to you today, we calculated its cost in comparison to the kind of information we had when we prepared the budget, and the kind of the proposal that will be coming on October 20th will be about $300,000 greater than what was adopted in the budget.
If you didn't tell me, I wouldn't know.
So, and $100,000 of the $300,000 is in the electric fund, and then about $115,000 is in the general fund. At this moment, when I pulled a census of city employees that are covered under this pay plan, we have 14 unfilled positions. So, when we prepare the budget, we prepare it with zero lapse, meaning that every position is filled every day of the year. So we would monitor this, the difference of $300,000, and make an adjustment at year end if needed. But the dollar amount, historically, I wouldn't think we would need to make a budget adjustment at year end.
And that's why I said I know we can't be exact.
If you recall, when we presented the collective bargaining agreement for MOP, we presented that information the same way. We let you all know what the increase is for the current year and what the additional budget impact would be. And again, we wait until year end to see if there's a necessary adjustment. Should there be reason to have to adjust at year end, we do have, for the general fund, we have an anticipated budget for that. So it wouldn't be an increase to the overall budget.
For those 14 positions, that's just attrition, right? That's going to be retirees or someone that quit or?
Vacancies? They're just vacancies, and they're the new positions that were added as part of the budget that we haven't been able to. Yeah, so it's a little bit of both.
Okay, good.
Ms. Costa, just so it's clear in my mind, please forgive me. I don't recall exactly the details of the budget. When you said $300,000 more than what was in the budget, what was in the budget?
So what was in the budget for just this pay plan, not the collective bargaining employees, was $37.4 million for wages and benefits for 2026.
And if we implemented that, of these bar graphs on page 20 that are below zero, how much would it affect that? Or do you have any, or could you possibly provide that in the future?
He's talking about the individual departments.
So I don't have it calculated by individual department.
When we implement the changes, we implement the changes to pay grades, and those pay grades span all of those departments, and that's why we would be recommending an overall change to the pay grades, not to the individual positions of the individual departments when it comes to pay grades. Now, those will be addressed through reclassification for those identified positions.
So that. And that's where we'll, that's where for some of these positions that we know that may be a little off or that are highly competitive roles, that's where some of those will be addressed.
You'll see some of those being recommended for reclassification. But it's important to keep in mind, like Stacey said, that bar graph doesn't tell you everything you need to know. And there are some comparables within that bar graph that are kind of skewing the results. So.
And I think it's that. Those roles that are skewing it, that are creating the concern for, and I don't want to speak
sure,
to council.
No,
please do.
But I think it's, you know, it's the same concern. Like if you look at, you know, the electric team, and it's probably not hard to figure out where we're off because of the competitive nature of what we do, mm-hmm. and so those are the types of things that if we're going to go through this process and we're going to try to fix things, that we want to make sure that some of those roles really are, you know, that we do take care of those people appropriately, whatever appropriately means. And, we probably all have opinions on that, but collectively we have to come up with an answer.
Yeah, we take all that into consideration. But the way that the pay grades are structured, not all of the pay grades, but the majority of them are structured, is going to impact across all departments. And so we move all of those by the same.
There's the rising tide floats all boats, but then there's a couple of boats that you need to.
Right, and then we'll try to write those boats as we see them lock in.
Yeah. And the 300,000 account for the lock in boats.
There you go. Yes.
And when you guys provide us those numbers, the 30, what was it?
37.4.
Will we also get insight into kind of what percentage of that is specifically allocated to the changes we're making? So
when we present the information, the budget impact, we would present this budget and show you the increase, and we can break down that increase by department. Does that answer your question?
Not exactly. So like if to fix this, to implement our plan, we're going to spend $2 million that we would not have spent before by not implementing the plan, like, would we have insight into what that impact is so that we know what type of, like, if we were voting on a contract and the contract was for $1 million, we'd know that it cost $1 million, we'd be voting on a contract. We'd understand the implications of the contract and its financial implications. On this, we understand the number of the total budget. We don't necessarily have insight into the decision that we're voting on, which is to implement this new pay scale.
So would it be helpful if I presented the chart the way that we did with the police? We had the 2025 original budget.
That would be fabulous. You already said you were going to do that. Sorry.
So we'll put the table together the exact same way.
Yeah. I think that would give us great insight into that.
And we'll also point out the increase over the already adopted 2026 budget. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anything else?
What are the next steps?
Next steps, we're going to bring a resolution to council on October 20th with pay plan amendments for you to consider and adopt by resolution. We're going to present you with a red line pay plan to show you all the changes. There will also be some changes within the appendix. There's Appendix A and Appendix B within our pay plan. We're going to have a few policy changes for you to consider as well. We haven't really dove into those tonight because those are really not as impactful, especially when we're talking about budget impact. But there will be some policy changes, but primarily we'll be looking at the pay grade adjustments and then the individual positions that are being recommended to be reclassified.
And the second reading of the ordinance.
And the second reading of the pension ordinances, both general and police pension plan ordinance. Those will be coming to you on October 20th as well.
Thank you, Ms. Nelson.
Mm-hmm. I just want to say, we don't often have the Phoenix City employees in the room, so I want to take a moment and thank you all for the City of Jacksonville Beach every day. We appreciate and value you very much. Normally, we only see you at all together at Christmas parties, spring lunches and everything. So no chicken wings today, but and thank you for being out here and advocating for yourselves and learning kind of the side of the process too. It's a lot. And I hope that you can see that city administration as well as city council takes it very seriously. So thank you all for being here and for being out there every day.
If I could piggyback off that, yeah, I just want to also extend my appreciation. And we all have email addresses and are on the website, so if you have any great concerns, please email us. Absolutely.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, well, with that, I think that wraps us up. If you all have any questions to follow up, you can give me a call, or Kim, or Asher, or anybody on the team. Thanks, all of you, for being here. I know this is a little different for you this year. We've been very patient. But we're happy to see you.